Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, April 19, 2024. The U.S. House passes a resolution setting up debate and votes on Saturday on four foreign policy bills, including one to provide $61 billion to Ukraine. More Democrats than Republicans voting for today's resolution. And the small group of House Republicans who have threatened to force a vote to remove Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican, if he brings up a Ukraine aid bill without U.S. border security provisions, now says they have another co-sponsor. And House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries is asked again if Democrats would vote to save the Speaker's job if faced with that motion to vacate. The U.S. Senate continues work on the reauthorization of FISA Section 702 spying authority for non-U.S. citizens overseas, but a disagreement on what amendments will be allowed may push the debate into Saturday when the current authorization expires. Israel reportedly launches another airstrike on Iran. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. was not involved, and the Biden administration is looking to de-escalate the conflict. Two jet airliners have a near miss at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport, and the two U.S. senators from Virginia say that is reason enough not to increase the number of flights in and out of that airport. Former President Donald Trump complains about the gag order on him as he attends day four of his hush money criminal trial in New York City. A full jury with alternates are now seated. Opening statements expected to start next week. Donald Trump, on the way out, asked if he will testify, and he says yes. And President Joe Biden speaks to an electrical workers union conference in Washington. From ABC News, the House on Friday cleared a key procedural hurdle in passing foreign aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, despite dozens of Republican defections, with Democrats helping Speaker Mike Johnson avoid a defeat. The chamber voted 316-94 to advance the bills, setting up a Saturday vote on final passage of $95 billion in foreign assistance that has been held up in a political fight in Washington for several months. Such procedural votes are typically passed by the House majority alone, but Democrats stepped in to help push the legislation forward after Republican hardliners collectively opposed the measure. More Democrats voted to advance the bills than Republicans. That was reporting from ABC News. Congressman Michael Burgess, Republican from Texas, chairs the Rules Committee as he led the debate on the House floor.
I'm well aware there have been concerns in our conference and really on both sides of the House about the southern border and the national debt. As a member from Texas, as a member of the Budget Committee, I fully understand these concerns and I share all of them. But the requirement for America to assert itself as the leader of the free world is not optional. It's not a requirement we can put on pause. Israel has been attacked. China talks menacingly about reunification with Taiwan. Ukraine is in crisis and is in need of our help to survive Russian aggression. Now, I would say to the president, this legislation on the floor today perhaps could have been facilitated by some leadership from the executive branch. But despite the circumstances that brought us here, we stand before the House to support our allies and reaffirm America's leadership on the world stage. H.R. 8034, the Israel Security Supplemental Appropriations Act, will provide much-needed material support to the Jewish state as it faces twin threats from Hamas and the Islamic Republic of Iran. This includes $4 billion to replenish Israel's Iron Dome and over $1 billion for the Iron Beam defense system. H.R. 8036, the Indo-Pacific Security Supplemental Appropriations Act of 2024, will work to counter the Chinese Communist Party and create a strong deterrence in the region, while 8035, the Ukraine Supplemental Appropriations Act, will assist Ukraine as they counter Russian aggression. Of the latter, all financial assistance to Ukraine's government is converted into a loan, ensuring that the Ukrainian government is held accountable to the American people. Mr. Speaker, there is no doubt that our failure in Afghanistan was the spark in the tinderbox that led to the subsequent invasion of Ukraine in 2022. And that conflict had been smoldering for a long time. certainly at least since 2014 in two previous administrations. Had the administration in 2014, as well as the current administration, had more foresight to provide aid and arms to Ukraine before February of 2022, there might have been a different set of circumstances that we were contemplating today, and there might have been a more swift resolution to this conflict with the saving of untold lives. Mr. Speaker, I stand with my colleagues requesting more information from the administration. The American people deserve answers about how previous funding has been used. They deserve answers about what are the long-term goals by the administration to resolve this conflict. I welcome more oversight. I welcome additional information from the administration, and will continue to push its accountability. But today we are at an inflection point, and the longer we wait, the more expensive any solution to this conflict will become, both in terms of dollars and lives. Lack of aid now could cost us much more dearly later, and I don't want that to become a reality, and I would hope my colleagues on both sides of the aisle feel the same.
Congressman Michael Burgess, Republican from Texas, chair of the Rules Committee on the House floor, on a resolution that would set up debate on Saturday on four bills dealing with foreign aid. One provides $61 billion for Ukraine, the second, $26 billion for Israel and humanitarian relief, including for civilians in Gaza. The third, $8 billion for the Indo-Pacific, principally Taiwan. The fourth bill includes sanctions on Iran, allowing frozen Russian assets to be used to pay for Ukraine funding, and a possible ban of the TikTok video app in the U.S. if the parent company, that's a Chinese company, does not sell it. Congressman Chip Roy, Republican from Texas, is a member of the Rules Committee and opposed the rule today because of the Ukraine aid and the lack of U.S. border security provisions.
People are dying in Ukraine, yes. But the problem is they're being funded with American debt. There is no skin in the game for the American people. We're not talking about tax increases. We're not doing anything to say that we're going to pay for this stuff as we rack up $1 trillion of debt every 3 months. But the truth is, Americans are dying, not just Ukrainians. At the hands of wide open borders, while literal hostiles flood into our country, fentanyl pours into our streets, people are chanting death to America. And the response by Republicans is to pass a $1.7 trillion cap-busting spending bill under suspension of the rules, handing the keys to the NSA and Intel to continue spying on Americans. And now we're on the floor under a rule to give another $100 billion to fund war, unpaid for, with zero border security. Under a rule which Republicans should oppose because it is a process pre-designed to achieve the desired predetermined outcome with no border security. The individual votes on Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan and a sweetener bill for TikTok are belied by the fact they are being packaged together as an amendment to the Senate-passed foreign aid bill. This was all pre-cooked. It's why President Biden and Chuck Schumer are praising it. The problem is there were 9 amendments handpicked by leadership in order, despite 300 amendments having been filed. Speaker Johnson said in January, if President Biden wants a supplemental spending bill focused on national security, it better begin with defending America's national security. We want to get the border closed and secured first. To that, I say amen. And where is that, Speaker Johnson?
Congressman Chip Roy, Republican from Texas, on the House floor. He voted no on this resolution, the rules for debate on the four foreign aid bills that will come up for debate and votes on Saturday. One of the Democrats voting yes today on the resolution, Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, ranking member of the Rules Committee.
Mr. Speaker, the world is watching. It is time for Congress to act, and act we must. America's allies have been waiting for this Republican majority to get their act together. People are dying in Ukraine. Democracy is on the line in Ukraine. And this Republican majority has been twiddling their thumbs. I'm glad my friends have finally come to realize the gravity of the situation and the urgency of getting this aid to our allies. And what have Republicans done? Nothing. No action to help our allies. It's all delay, distract, deny, and blame Joe Biden. Ukrainians are fighting for democracy, theirs and ours. and they have been set back as a result of Republican extremism. They have suffered because of Republican inaction. I'll remind my friends, Ukrainians didn't choose this war. It chose them. 2 years ago, when Putin illegally crossed the border and invaded, he was banking on the United States and our allies to grow weary. He was hoping we would give up. He was hoping we would do nothing. He was betting we would abandon our friends and our internal divisions would leave us in disarray, at odds with one another. I hope Putin is wrong, Mr. Speaker, because after 2 years of unrelenting war, Ukrainians are still willing to hold the line.
Congressman Jim McGovern, Democrat from Massachusetts, on the House floor. The rules for debate for the foreign aid bills passed today. The vote was 316-94. Voting yes, 151 Republicans and 165 Democrats. And voting no, 55 Republicans and 39 Democrats. Congressional Quarterly writes, the Rules Committee has recommended a combined rule which provides for separate consideration of each measure under structured rules that make in order specified amendments, except the Israel bill, which is a closed rule. And under the rule, the text of those bills that pass would be combined and sent to the Senate as a House amendment to H.R. 815, the Senate passed Security Supplemental. And debate and votes on those bills, Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and the fourth bill with various House Republican foreign affairs priorities, will be debated and voted on Saturday starting at 9 a.m. Eastern. You can listen live on C-SPAN Radio, watch on C-SPAN Television, follow at cspan.org or on the C-SPAN Now mobile app, or listen on your smart speaker, say play C-SPAN Radio. After today's rules vote on the House floor outside the House chamber, Speaker Mike Johnson made a statement to reporters.
Well, we're happy that the rule passed today. We look forward to final passage on the bill tomorrow. I think there's a couple of things that are important to remember here. We did not pass the Senate supplemental bill. The Senate was sent effectively as a blank check for foreign aid, and that is not, it did not comport with the policies or the process in the House. It was a better process to break the bills into four separate measures for consideration, and that is what we will have tomorrow. Everyone can vote their will and their constituents' desires on the Israel aid, the Ukrainian aid, the Indo-Pacific, and then our fourth national security package that has all of our innovations in it. Because we did this process, we got a better outcome here. We have a lot of innovations that the Senate did not consider. We include the Repo Act, which, as you know, is the use of corrupt Russian oligarchs' assets to help fund the resistance in Ukraine. We introduced the loan concept for the governmental assistance part. It would be provided in a loan instead of a gift. We also included some really important sanctions on Russia and China and Iran, which I believe is the new axis of evil, and many of us do, and they are the ones who are the aggressors in this situation. The reality here is that if the House did not do this better policy and process, allowing for amendments on the floor in the process tomorrow, we would have had to eat the Senate supplemental bill. And that is because we were very close, given the timeline in both Israel and Ukraine, to a discharge petition being brought. And a discharge petition, in layman's terms, is that when a number of members or a majority of members get together, they can override the speaker and bring something straight to the floor. That would have happened imminently on the Senate supplemental. So by doing this, even though it's not the perfect legislation, it's not the legislation that we would write if Republicans were in charge of both the House, the Senate, and the White House, this is the best possible product that we can get under these circumstances to take care of these really important obligations. And so we look forward to the vote tomorrow. We look forward to every member voting their conscience and their desire. And that is exactly how this process is supposed to work and how the House is supposed to operate. So we're happy to provide that. And we'll give you more comment tomorrow.
Mr. Speaker.
House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, speaking to reporters outside the House chamber in the U.S. Capitol building. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican from Georgia, has threatened to move forward with a privilege resolution to remove the speaker if he allows a bill funding Ukraine to come to the floor. Congressman Thomas Massey, Republican from Kentucky, is a co-sponsor, and today Congresswoman Greene announced she has a third.
I've been working on the House floor just now, talking with other members, asking for co-sponsors in my motion to vacate Mike Johnson as Speaker, because we have completely lost confidence in his leadership now that he is allowing Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer to completely control the House. This has never happened before in history, and I'm pleased to announce that I've just added another co-sponsor, and that is the great patriot from Arizona, Paul Gosar.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene today on Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, and Congressman Paul Gosar, Republican of Arizona, putting out a statement that reads in part, "I have added my name in support of the motion to vacate the Speaker. Our border cannot be an afterthought. We need a Speaker who puts America first rather than bending to the reckless demands of the warmongers, neocons, and the military-industrial complex making billions from a costly and endless war half a world away." House Republicans have a two-vote margin in the House that will drop to one vote after this weekend when Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin resigns. The House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, was asked today at a news conference if enough Democrats would vote no on a motion to vacate the Speaker's chair to keep Mike Johnson Speaker.
I don't know if you're aware, but Congressman Paul Gosar has now come out in favor of a motion to vacate, joining Congressman Green's motion to potentially oust the Speaker. Obviously, if all Democrats were to join them, the Speaker could potentially be out. I know when I asked you yesterday about the motion to vacate, you pointed back to your previous statements in February, and at that time you told the New York Times, were Speaker Johnson to do the right thing relative to meeting the significant national security needs of the American people by putting it on the floor for an up or down vote, there will be a reasonable number of people in the House Democratic Caucus who will take the position that he should not fall as a result. Is that still your position?
Yeah, that's a declaration, not an observation, but that statement still stands.
I just wanted to clarify.
By the way,
to be clear, you would save him.
No, that's a declaration, not an observation. We'll have to have the conversation before the House caucus. But first things first, we still have to get the national security bills over the finish line. In that statement, that's what we made clear. That we have to do the business of the American people. We've been waiting for months, unnecessarily, because of gamesmanship and partisanship and brinksmanship on the other side of the aisle. First, the extreme MAGA Republicans said, we can't meet the national security needs of the American people until we make changes to border policy. And then the extreme MAGA Republicans killed a border policy, bipartisan piece of legislation. Then we were told that the extreme MAGA Republicans could not address the national security needs of the American people until a spending bill was completed. Democrats provided the support necessary to make sure that we funded the government in a manner that was compassionate and comprehensive and met the needs of the American people. And then we went on to another excuse from the extreme MAGA Republicans. Third, we were told that the national security needs of the American people could not be met until we reauthorized the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Even though we were promised, after finishing the spending bill, that the first order of priority upon our return to Washington in April would be national security legislation. Well, we had to deal with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which Democrats once again helped get over the finish line. Extreme MAGA Republicans, as we have observed, are out of excuses, and the American people and our allies in Ukraine and throughout the world are out of time in terms of our national security needs being met. Hopefully we're on track for that to happen tomorrow. We've been very honest in our assessment of the situation from the very beginning, including in the declaration that I made in late February. And at the appropriate time, as House Democrats, we will have a conversation about how to deal with any hypothetical motion to vacate, which at this point hasn't been noticed. Moscow, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Massey, and Gosar are quite a group. And I'm sure that will play some role in our conversation. But central to the conversation, the prerequisite to the conversation, is to make sure that the national security legislation in totality is passed by the House of Representatives.
The House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, at his news conference today. Congressman Matt Gaetz, Republican from Florida, posting on X today, "I'm not here to defend Speaker Johnson's choices or his actions. However, when I filed the motion to vacate the previous speaker, we had a 4-seat majority. My sincere worry is that one or two or three of my Republican colleagues would be susceptible to a bribe and will hand the House over to Democrats. That is why I do not support a motion to vacate at this time." The U.S. Senate is in session today and will likely also be in this weekend as they work on a few pieces of legislation. First, reauthorizing Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the warrantless wiretap spying authority for non-U.S. citizens overseas. And secondly, the National Security Supplemental Spending Package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan that the House is expected to pass on Saturday. The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, spoke on the Senate floor this morning.
The Senate will continue working today to pass FISA reauthorization. We're still trying to see if there's a path to getting this bill done quickly, but disagreements remain on how to proceed. The work is not done, so we're going to keep at it. We want to get FISA done as soon as we can because it's very important for our national security. But as everyone knows, any one member can halt progress in this chamber. So both sides need to fully cooperate if we want to get FISA done. So, for the information of my colleagues, members should plan to be here over the weekend, if necessary, to work on both FISA and the supplemental.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor. About FISA Section 702, a CNN article explains there is broad support and it will eventually be approved, but it has fierce critics in both parties who have privacy and other concerns, and they have the ability to procedurally to drag out final passage of the bill into the weekend if an agreement is not reached. The government hoovers up massive amounts of internet and cell phone data on foreign targets. Hundreds of thousands of Americans' information is incidentally collected during that process and then accessed each year without a warrant, down from millions of such queries the U.S. government ran in past years. Critics refer to these queries as backdoor searches, part of the article from CNN. The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, said today on the Senate floor that the Senate must pass the House-passed version of FISA Section 702 reauthorization to get it to the president to sign it into law.
For the past 16 years, federal law enforcement and intelligence professionals have used Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to identify and minimize foreign threats to U.S. national security. The carefully targeted authorities established back in 2008 are an essential tool for staying in step ahead of non-U.S. persons who seek to harm the American people. But unless the Senate acts today, those authorities will end tonight. Our friends in the House understood the threat on a bipartisan basis. They spent months working to craft sensible reforms to guard against future abuses, made changes to adapt the program to meet the demands of new technologies, and took tough votes against amendments that may sound good, but would actually kill the program. The House deserves credit for reforming and reauthorizing this essential authority. Now, the Senate's choice is clear. We could pass the House's reform bill, or, given the late hour and political reality, we can essentially doom the program to go dark.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, on the Senate floor. Some senators have offered or want to offer an amendment that would require a warrant for a Section 702 search. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, also spoke today opposed to a part of the House-passed FISA Section 702 reauthorization.
Now, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee called this amendment, expanding all these surveillance authorities, he called it merely technical. I want to explain why it's not just technical and how it passed the House with virtually no debate. And Mr. President, as I believe you and I have talked about, this has never been considered, repeat, never been considered here in the United States Senate. But members of the Senate are now being told the same thing that came up in the House. Nothing to see here. It's technical, and it's all classified. So stop asking questions. Now, I have spoken to a number of colleagues here, and I've urged them to just read the plain language of the provision. When they do so, they will see for themselves that this is actually a very substantial and dangerous expansion of warrantless surveillance authorities. Under the provision, there would be virtually no limits to who can be forced into spying for the government. Any company that installs, maintains, or repairs Wi-Fi or other communication systems in any American business or home, for example, can be dragged into this. So can any other company that provides a service that gives its employees access to any communications equipment, which would include a server, a wire, a cable box, a Wi-Fi router, a phone, or a computer. Lots of examples here, Mr. President. Every office building in America has data cables running through it. Tens of thousands of commercial establishments offer Wi-Fi to their customers. Under this provision, landlords, the companies that maintain the cables and Wi-Fi, and any number of companies whose employees have access to any of that equipment can all be forced to cooperate with the government's surveillance.
Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, on the Senate floor. If the FISA Section 702 reauthorization does not pass the Senate today, then, according to Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the Senate will be in session this weekend. As always, you can follow the Senate proceedings live, gavel to gavel, on C-SPAN 2 television or follow it on the C-SPAN Now mobile app. Associated Press reporting from Capri, Italy, the United States told the group of seven foreign ministers on Friday that it received last-minute information from Israel about a drone action in Iran, but didn't participate in the apparent attack, officials said. Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani, who chaired the meeting of ministers of industrialized countries, said the United States provided the information at a Friday morning session that was changed at the last minute to address the suspected attack. Early on Friday, Iran fired air defenses from a major air base and a nuclear site near the central Iranian city of Isfahan. After spotting drones, it was part of an apparent Israeli attack in retaliation for Tehran's unprecedented drone and missile assault on the country last weekend. That was from Associated Press. Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressed the developments at a news conference at the G7 ministers meeting in Italy.
The first question goes to Olivia Gazis with CBS News.
Thank you very much. Mr. Secretary, there is a lot to ask you about today, so with your indulgence. First, on Israel strikes in Iran, was the U.S. indeed alerted in advance? How far ahead of time? And did it raise any objections when it was? Are the strikes now over? And do you have any indication at this early stage via direct or indirect messaging that Iran will respond? And have there been any changes in Iran's nuclear program? On Israel, there are reports that your department has made recommendations to cut military aid to certain Israeli units for possible human rights violations in the West Bank before October 7th. Will you take action on those recommendations? And finally, on the recent U.S. Assessments, you mentioned that China may be growing its support for Russia for its war effort in Ukraine. Do you believe that President Xi is sensing an opportunity amid flagging U.S. support to the Ukrainians? Thank you, sir.
Great. Thanks, Olivia. On the first question, the reports that you've seen, I'm not going to speak to that, except to say that the United States has not been involved in any offensive operations. What we're focused on, what the G7 is focused on, and again, it's reflected in our statement and in our conversation, is our work to de-escalate tensions, to de-escalate from any potential conflict. You saw Israel on the receiving end of an unprecedented attack. But our focus has been on, of course, making sure that Israel can effectively defend itself, but also de-escalating tensions, avoiding conflict. And that remains our focus. Again, I'm not going to speak to anything other than to say we were not involved in any offensive operations. With regard to the other questions, first, on China and Russia. Look, I think that what we're seeing is a product of the relationship between those two countries. You've heard them speak to it, including just before Russia's aggression against Ukraine. We've made very clear to China, and many other countries have as well, that they should not be supplying Russia with weapons for use in its aggression against Ukraine. We've not seen the direct supply of weapons, but as I said, what we have seen is not only the direct supply, but the critical supply of inputs, of components for Russia's defense industrial base, which is allowing two things. It's allowing Russia to continue the aggression against Ukraine. It's also helping Russia overall rebuild its defense forces and defense capacity that so much damage has been done to by the Ukrainians, but also by our sanctions and export controls. And that means that not only is Russia a current threat to Ukraine, it will remain an enduring threat to other European countries. And that's why I said China can't have it both ways. It can't purport to want to have positive, friendly relations with countries in Europe and at the same time be fueling the biggest threat to European security since the end of the Cold War. That was very clear from our conversations around the table. I believe Europeans have expressed that and will continue to express that clearly to China in the days and weeks ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. So on that, I think you're referring to the so-called Leahy law and our work under that. So this is a very important law, and it's one that we apply across the board. And when we're doing these investigations, these inquiries, it's something that takes time, that has to be done very carefully, both in collecting the facts and analyzing them. And that's exactly what we've done. And I think it's fair to say that you'll see results very soon. I've made determinations. You can expect to see them in the days ahead.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken at a news conference at the G7 foreign ministers meeting in Capri, Italy. Another Associated Press article, Israel and Iran on Friday both played down an apparent Israeli airstrike near a major airbase and nuclear site in central Iran, signaling the two bitter enemies are ready to prevent their latest eruption of violence from escalating into a full-blown regional war. Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi there. I'm Jonathan from C-SPAN, along with my colleague, Ben. Since C-SPAN's founding 45 years ago, the media world has changed. Remember when there were just a few TV channels? Now, we've got streaming, social media, apps, and more.
Through all of this, C-SPAN has stayed true to its mission of giving you unfiltered access to government wherever you get your news. As we navigate this challenging media environment with fewer people subscribing to traditional cable packages, our funding has been impacted.
That's why we're asking for your help to keep going strong for another 45 years. Please donate today at cspan.org/donate. Your contribution, large or small, helps ensure at least another 45 years of witnessing democracy in action.
Keep C-SPAN thriving in today's ever-changing media landscape. Visit cspan.org/donate to make your gift today. Thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app that's free and wherever you find your podcasts. The Federal Aviation Administration, writes the Washington Post, is investigating a near-miss incident at Reagan National Airport on Thursday that involved a Southwest Airlines jet and a JetBlue Airways plane. According to the FAA, the incident took place at 7:41 a.m., an air traffic controller instructed Southwest Flight 2937 to cross runway 4 while JetBlue Flight 1554 was starting its takeoff roll down the same runway, the agency said. No serious injuries were reported. In a statement, JetBlue said the aircraft was inspected before ultimately departing for Boston. Safety is JetBlue's first priority, and we will work closely with federal officials as this event is fully investigated, the airline said in a statement. And Southwest Airlines said it is aware of the incident and will work with the FAA to fully understand the circumstances. That was from the Washington Post. Today on the U.S. Senate floor, the two senators from Virginia, Tim Kaine and Mark Warner, both Democrats, spoke about this incident and says it shows that there should not be more long-distance flights or any more flights approved from Reagan National Airport. This is Senator Tim Kaine.
Yesterday was not an unusually busy day. It was a typically busy day on the nation's busiest runway at DCA. The FAA is still investigating the incident. There is disturbing audio that is circulating that I hope every member of this body will listen to. In the audio, you can hear air traffic controllers frantically yelling at each plane over the communications to stop, stop, before both planes were able to halt their movements and narrowly avoid a collision. We're all relieved that disaster was averted and that no injuries or damages occurred thanks to the actions of the ATC professionals at DCA. But I'm incredulous that in a discussion about reauthorizing the Federal Aviation Administration, a bill that is meant to make travel safer, some members of Congress view this package as an opportunity to jam even more flights for their own personal convenience into a runway at DCA that is already overburdened and can't handle extra capacity. The gamble is exactly the opposite of improving public safety. The Federal Aviation Administration and the Regional Airport Commission created by Congress, the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, both agree that adding any flights to DCA will increase delays due to the increased risk for incidents like this.
Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat from Virginia, on the Senate floor today. He was joined by the other U.S. Senator from Virginia, also Democrat, Mark Warner. Back to the Washington Post article, a coalition led by Delta Airlines is advocating for more service at National, saying it would lower ticket prices and make it easier for travelers to visit the nation's capital. From the New York Times, the final jurors for Donald J. Trump's criminal trial were selected on Friday, with lawyers preparing to offer opening statements on Monday in a landmark proceeding that was suddenly overshadowed at midday by the spectacle of a man setting himself aflame outside the courthouse. Five Manhattan residents were chosen Friday, filling out a group of 12 seated jurors and six alternates who will hear the accusations from the Manhattan District Attorney's office that Mr. Trump sought to cover up a sex scandal that could have imperiled his 2016 run for president. The day was marked by an intensity of emotion from the start. Several prospective jurors asked to be excused, and some became upset, with one saying she had become too nervous to continue the process. Then word quietly began to spread about the man who had set himself on fire in a park across the street from the courthouse. The courtroom proceedings continued, but the stir was noticeable, and reporters ran from the room. The man's motivations were not immediately clear, but he was carrying leaflets espousing anti-government conspiracy theories. In an afternoon hearing at which the judge was to determine the questions prosecutors could ask the former president if he were to testify, proceeded as scheduled. From the New York Times. As Donald Trump left the courtroom today, he was asked whether he would testify.
Mr. Trump, how does it go?
President Trump, are you going to testify?
Yes.
Donald Trump leaving the courtroom, he then came back and made his statement.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We just had another hearing, and the trial starts on Monday, which is long before a lot of people thought. The judge wants us to go as fast as possible. That's for his reasons, not for my reasons. And this is really a concerted witch hunt, very simple. Everything you heard in there, this is a witch hunt by numerous judges, Democrat judges. You take a look at it, and Gorin is a whack job. What he did was a disgrace. It's being reviewed by the appellate division. And I hope they do justice, because everybody's looking, and nobody, no business is coming into the city. None whatsoever. They're looking at that case. That case is a threat to democracy, frankly, what took place with the AG. A crooked AG, Letitia James, who campaigned in the fact that I'm going to get Trump. That's all she said for 2 years. And it's, people don't want to see this stuff. when you have violent criminals all over the streets of New York and nothing happens to them, even when they catch them, they let them go. No bail, no bail whatsoever. So this is just a concerted witch hunt, whether it's Judge Kaplan with a person I have no idea until they called and said they're suing us. I had no idea who this person was, or this judge, or if you look at Ed Gorin, where he said that Mar-a-Lago, which if it was worth $1 billion or $1.5 billion, he said it was worth $18 million because that suited his narrative. But what's happening in this city and all over the country, but what's happening in particular in this city, some are very good, by the way, some are very fair. Those are really the cities that are thriving. But what's happening here with the judicial system is an outrage. And all over the world they're watching it, and all over the world they're saying it. This is a giant witch hunt to try and hurt a campaign that's beating the worst president in history. Biden's the worst president in the history of our country, beating him by a lot. And this is the only way they think they can win, but it's not going to work. Thank you very much.
Are your lawyers doing a good job?
What do you think of the man who set himself on fire, sir?
Do you still support Speaker Johnson?
Donald Trump, former president and Republican presidential candidate, outside the courtroom in Manhattan, opening statements in the hush money criminal trial begin Monday. From the Washington Examiner, President Joe Biden took a number of shots at his opponent in the 2024 general election, former President Donald Trump, during his Friday speech at the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Construction and Maintenance Conference. Biden and Trump are chasing union endorsements ahead of the general election, with both men relying on support from blue-collar workers in battlegrounds to secure their respective presidential victories. IBEW endorsed Biden in 2020 and again in 2023, just after he announced his reelection bid. On Friday, the president said he added tens of thousands of good-paying union jobs to the economy over the past 4 years, while simultaneously claiming Trump never lifted a finger to help labor groups while in office, and Biden saying, matter of fact, he lifted a finger to put a thumb on it. That from the Washington Examiner. Here's part of President Biden's speech to the IBEW conference.
You know, since the 1930s, and I have to admit to you, in my early days in the Senate, I didn't realize this law said it. The law that established the rights of union to organize back in the 30s, well, that law said a little piece of it. No one paid much attention to. The law said that when the federal government spends taxpayers' dollars, it has to buy American products with it, and it has to use American labor. But that was honored in an exception. The vast majority of the presidents didn't do it. And the last guy didn't even know it. A lot of things he doesn't know. But look, that's Buy American. Past administrations, including my predecessor, failed to uphold it. But not anymore. My administration uses American products and American labor to build those products. By the way, for all you skilled trade representatives out there, it's totally within all the rules and regulations. And there's no violation. We're not violating anything, man, except we're showing the world what we can do. At the same time, we're making the most significant climate investments ever. When I think of climate, I think of jobs, union jobs, good-paying jobs, many that don't require a college degree. And that's what we're seeing. We've attracted $700 billion. In private investments in advanced manufacturing, clean energy, and more here in America, creating tens of thousands of good-paying IBEW jobs. The bottom line is, this is not exaggeration, the next decade and beyond, you'll be coming to this conference seeing how critical the IBEW is and how transformative the progress you're going to be making for the country. And I mean transformative. Take nuclear power, the biggest source of clean energy. It employs over 60,000 workers, including many of you. The key to meeting the goal of 100% clean power grid by 2035 depends a lot on it. That's why we're keeping existing plants open, restarting shuttered plants, and building America's first new nuclear plants in decades.
President Joe Biden at the IBEW conference in Washington. That's International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Monday is Earth Day. And at NASA Earth, posting on X, NASA just announced 6 new airborne missions to study our planet and its climate. The projects will study fire-induced clouds, coastal change in the Arctic, air pollution, landslides, shrinking glaciers, and greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture. The NASA Administrator Bill Nelson talked about it at a news conference at NASA headquarters in Washington.
We've got another announcement today, and it is that it's an Earth Venture program that will fund 6 new airborne missions. Dr. St. Germain's going to go into the detail, but I can just tell you, on the North Slope of Alaska, the Arctic coastal change, that's one. What about what happens when we get all these wildfires that we've had? And all that smoke goes up and it creates clouds. Clouds created by fire. What about the urban air pollution? And we sometimes, if you go to a place in other parts of the world, you don't even want to breathe, and you certainly don't want to go outside unless you've got a mask, which, by the way, I've been wearing recently in my jogging in Washington, D.C., because there is so much pollen here, and you can hear it in my voice right now. We also are looking at, from our airborne platforms, how drought and rainfall are affecting and shaping land. What about glacial ice? I'll never forget, 15 years ago, I went to Greenland, and I went up on that glacier, and I could see how that glacier, as the scientists were telling us, how it was moving, and it was coming into the sea. And then agricultural emissions. And we take our instruments in space with regard to agriculture very seriously, because we can help farmers. We can tell them what's the moisture content of your soil, what you ought to be planting, how you can plan for the drought that's coming, how much water do you want to reserve, what kind of crop ought you to plant on this soil with this moisture content.
The NASA Administrator Bill Nelson at today's Climate Science News Conference in Washington ahead of Earth Day on Monday. On Wall Street, the Dow up 211, NASDAQ down 319, S&P down 43. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter Word for Word, and you'll get the stories making headlines in Washington sent to your inbox every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night and weekend.